This session is being recorded, and you'll be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. I'd ask that everyone would silence their cell phones and iPads and other things that could make unruly noises. There have been a couple people in other sessions that have forgotten to do that. This evening, if you hear things that are challenging to you or that you disagree with, we'd ask that you practice what our brothers and sisters at the Community of Christ call faithful disagreement, which means that you respectfully disagree while practicing empathy for opposite points of view. At Sunstone, we recognize that there are more than one way to Mormon, and this means that every life and experience is unique and should be honored, and we should do that with respect as to how someone else experiences their own Mormonism. We invite all of you to help build a world where there is richness and diversity, and it's celebrated, and where empathy becomes a daily practice. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask that both the audience and the presenters will keep to the time framework, and I'll let Ryan know when we have 3 minutes left and then 1 minute left. About this presentation, Mormon Leaks was founded in December of 2015 by Ryan McKnight, as he gathered Mormon-related leaks and assembled a team to create and operate the website. What is the process behind gathering leaks? How does the website work? How did each team member get involved, and what are their roles? Those will be the questions that will be answered in this presentation. Ryan was born into the LDS Church and left at the age of 32. He has a master's degree in accounting from UNLV and is the founder of Mormon Leaks and of the Underground Handcart Company. So I'd like to introduce to you Ryan.
Thank you, Anthony. One of the things that he discussed that I'm going to kind of suspend just a little bit for this presentation, and he talked about, you know, being respectful to the presenter and things like this. Privacy P. Pratt, who's joining us via Skype, when we are done talking, we're going to try to leave a good amount of time for questions, and we just want to let you guys know from the outset that there is no questions off the table. So challenge us if you want to challenge us. Say thank you if you want to say thank you, but don't be afraid to offend us with a tough question. We actually hope to get some tough questions today. So now, also keep in mind that just because I said there's no questions off the table, that doesn't mean I'm going to answer all the questions. So, but we will cross that bridge when it comes. So really quick, before I really get into the meat of this and introduce privacy, I want to first put a little bit of a plug in for tomorrow. I'm going to be doing another presentation at 3:45 in this same room, and it's going to be different from this one. It's still going to be talking about Mormon Leaks, but I'm going to get more into some of the more intimate reasons as to why and transparency is so important to me, and why what it is we would, let's say, expect from the church type of a thing. Whereas today is more of like, we want it to be a little bit more laid back. We want to tell you guys a little bit of some behind the scenes stuff, some mistakes we've made along the way, maybe some things we're really proud of, and have a lot of questions, and have more of like a, if for those familiar with Reddit, kind of like an ask me anything type of a atmosphere here. So tomorrow will be a little bit more serious, maybe. And that's, again, 3:45 in this room. And I may say it again at the end in case we had some stragglers. All right. So any questions? I already said all that. Okay, so I'm going to speak a little bit on, you know, the founding of Mormon Leaks and all this stuff from my perspective. But first, I want to let Privacy P. Pratt, I hope a lot of people know that name. Obviously, that's not his real name. But he's going to talk a little bit about his journey within Mormon Leaks and how he got involved, and then I will pick up when he's done. His voice is going to be distorted, so he's got kind of a recognizable voice, so if there's anybody in here that would happen to know him, you know, he needs to stay anonymous for now, and I won't really go into the reasons why. I don't know if he will or not, but don't be startled by the distorted voice. It's not how he actually sounds in real life, and we're hoping that technically that that it's working. So privacy, if you can hear me, you want to take yourself off of mute and then go ahead and start talking, and hopefully we'll be able to hear you.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. They're laughing at your distorted voice.
Awesome. First off, I apologize that I'm not able to be there in person. I am a cybersecurity professional, and almost every cybersecurity professional in the country is in Las Vegas right now because there are three major cybersecurity conferences happening this week, and I'm actually speaking at two of them. So I'm actually speaking at three different conferences in 1 week, so it's been a busy week for me. But the topic has been Mormon leaks at all of these conferences. Anyway, I just wanted to kind of take a few minutes and talk about how I got involved with Mormon leaks, why I wanted to get involved, and maybe some things that I'm proud of, some mistakes that we may have made. I'd been a lurker on the ex-Mormon subreddit for a long time. And so I knew who Ryan was by his Reddit handle. I knew about the small part that he played in bringing the November 2015 policy to the public. And then I remember seeing some of his other leaks between then and the videos that he leaked in October 2016. I saw some other leaks between then, and they seemed smaller, such as the $17,000 temple rug leak, things like that. And then it wasn't until in October 2016 when he leaked those videos from private meetings of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles that I decided it became glaringly obvious to me that there needed to exist some sort of medium, some sort of way for sources to come forward anonymously. After listening to an interview that Ryan did on Mormon Transitions, he talked about the way that the leaker got the videos to him, and from a cybersecurity and cyber forensics perspective, it kind of made me cringe a little bit. the leaker had left behind several footprints that would be traceable, and I felt that there was a great need for a system for the technical ability for leakers and sources to come forward, give Ryan documents, or give whoever documents, with a guarantee that they will remain anonymous unless they themselves compromise their anonymity. So shortly after, probably about a week or two after the videos were leaked, I came up with the pseudonym of Privacy P. Pratt, and I messaged Ryan on Reddit and told him that I wanted to help him, and that I had expertise in cybersecurity and forensics. And we had a little bit of a back and forth. He was a little hesitant because I wanted to stay anonymous. And I did reveal my true identity to him. There are few people who know of my involvement with it within Mormon leaks. And the main reason why I've decided to stay anonymous is the potential social implications that it could have, along with a couple other big reasons that I don't necessarily want to get into right now. But anyway, Ryan did eventually find out who I was and decided to move forward with me, and I told him that I could get the site up and running in about 2 months, and that was about mid-October, and be launched December 19th. And so far, I think it's been a great success. We've made some mistakes, such as when many of you guys will probably remember when we originally launched, we launched with the name of Mormon WikiLeaks, and that was... I apologize. That was because we didn't really think WikiLeaks was going to care, that WikiLeaks was going to pay attention to us, but we were wrong. And they actually tweeted to us the very same day that we launched and asked us to change our name. I think our initial logo of completely mimicking WikiLeaks was a little, was also a mistake, again, for the same reason, which I will fully own up to. That was my idea because I honestly did not think that WikiLeaks was going to give a damn about us. But it's worked out. The reason that I do it is, the reason that I want to be involved with Mormon Leaks is, with the church making such high demands on so many of their members, I serve my mission in Latin America, and I baptize a lot of families very far below the poverty level. And asking them to pay tithing was always the hardest lesson for me. And seeing them do it, while I was happy because I was a missionary and they were paying tithing and that meant that they were one step closer to baptism, I still felt a slight tinge of guilt. I look at people like that have spent their whole lives and given their whole lives to the church, and have paid tithing their entire lives, yet know so little about the goings-on behind the curtain. I think the church has an ethical responsibility to reveal this information to its members, especially when they're building things like the City Creek Center or when they're the single largest landowner in the state of Florida. And Ryan has said many times, and I completely agree with him, that the church could make us stop right away just by opening their finances, right? But they refuse to. It's been an interesting ride to see. One of my favorite things is to see which leaks that get more attention than others, such as when we leaked that the church had done about had baptized Hitler in the temple. We thought that leak was just kind of a ridiculous one that no one was really going to care about, but I think to this day it's the leak that's gotten the most attention and the most views, other than the bubble chart, this quote-unquote enemies list that we leaked. And that was a major accomplishment for me to for the church. It was interesting seeing that particular document, the bubble chart, up to that point of anything we had leaked, that was the thing that the church can point to, that anybody could have pointed to, and claimed that we fabricated it. I mean, you look at that slide, and I could make up that exact same slide in about 3 minutes on PowerPoint, right? Yet the church completely validated it by issuing a DMCA takedown request the day after we leaked it. And they also, when we leaked President Eyring's pay stubs and the memo to a member of the First Quorum of the 70 saying that his stipend was going to be raised to $120,000, they also validated us there in saying that the general authorities, they're all paid the same amount. And that was the first time that I can personally remember the church publicly recognizing that the general authorities are indeed paid to some extent. There have since been shown other instances in which Gordon B. Hinckley claimed the same thing, but they're obscure and never ever referenced. I like to think that we're doing a lot of good. I feel that we're doing a lot of good, and I am proud to be part of the Mormon Leaks team. No, I'm still here. Sorry, that was me wrapping up.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So that's part of CP Pratt. Please give him a round of applause. I know on the public side of Mormon Leaks, I'm usually the one that gets all the praise, and because it's just the way the system is set up. But this website would not exist the way it does without him. So he deserves just as much, and maybe in some aspects more credit than I do. So he's going to stay on, and when we get to the question part, if anybody has any questions specifically for him, they can ask those. And any questions that are kind of for both, he's going to also take a moment to answer those. So, but I just wanted to take a few minutes, and let me move this thing here. Okay. So I just wanted to take a few minutes because everybody always wants, every time I meet somebody, they always want to say, well, you know, how did you become this, you know, Mormon Leaks, whatever. And the truth is that I fell into it ass backwards. I mean, there's really no way other way to put it. I did not set out. I did not grow up always wanting to be the founder of Mormon Leaks. I didn't leave the church saying, you know, oh, I'm going to create Mormon Leaks within the next 4 years. None of that happened. I'm sure we all remember what some would consider maybe that fateful day in November of 2015 when the KUTV published a story about a new policy, right? I'm not even going to get into what the policy is. We all know it, and I'm sure no matter what our status is in the church, I'm sure most of us here are not too much in agreement of it. At the time, I was kind of dubbed, at least in the internet world, as the leaker of that document. So the first thing I want to do is I want to clear that up a little bit, because although I did play a part in it, I think calling me the leaker is a little bit unfair, and I've tried to clarify it before, but it's really hard to do it writing, you know, a response on Reddit or something like that. It's hard to clarify exactly what my role was. So here's what happened from my perspective. I was in a private Facebook group that consisted, a very small group, maybe 50 people, consisted of the most ultra right-wing members of the LDS Church that you could imagine, okay? People who wished, Bruce R. McConkie was the prophet type of a thing. And there was a couple ex-Mormons in the group, me being one of them, and they knew that we were ex-Mormon, and a lot of ex-Mormons would join, and they would get kicked out because they couldn't live by the rules that these people set. But me and a couple others were really good at toeing the line, just sort of pushing the envelope just enough to not get kicked out. And one of those ex-Mormons, at the time, I don't really think he was an ex-Mormon, but I think he was more of sort of maybe a liberal or a progressive Mormon. He was an active member at the time and trying to make things work with his internal thoughts or whatever, but he posted in this group, and I also think he posted in his personal wall, but I only saw it in this group, about this new policy. And I think he was saying something like, what do you guys think about this new policy? And I actually saw it, and I thought, well, maybe there's something's getting lost in translation here, like there's got to be something, like really. So what I did was, is I cut and paste the verbiage that he put, and I put it on Reddit, which if you're not part of the ex-Mormon community on Reddit, you need to be, because it's very vibrant and, you know, very exciting. It's very active. So I put it on there, and it went viral immediately. And I put it on the Mormon Stories Facebook group, which also has a lot of activity. And John DeLynn contacted me, who I'd had some like limited interactions with prior to that, and he's like, where are you getting this? And I gave him the name of the person, and he contacted that person. And, you know, anyway, long story short, it ended up with KUTV, and I have no doubt that had that not happened, it would have still ended up with KUTV that night. I don't think something like this was going to be staying quiet for very long, even though that might be what the church was hoping for. But if I, you know, what I would like, for if people want to talk about my role in that, I would characterize it like this. I think I can say that I was the first person to put the information out to a wide audience. Prior to me posting on Reddit and Mormon Stories, I think there were very few people that knew about the policy. So Aaron Brown, who was my source, if you will, he was the leaker and he's blogged about it, at the time wanted to stay anonymous, which is another reason why I didn't really care about being anonymous. So that was kind of another reason why John DeLynn named me as his source or whatever, because my source wanted to stay quiet. So that's what happened in November. Now, my, you know, being in the right place at the right time, involvement in that, all of a sudden, at least online, my name wasn't in any of the articles that were written about it. But on Reddit and some other groups, people knew that I was, you know, this leaker. And so I was getting contacted like, I don't know, once or twice a month, maybe. Maybe sometimes less, maybe sometimes more. And people would say, oh, I got this document. And sometimes they'd send it to me. And I released a couple things. There was nothing really major. Some things that were interesting. One of the things that I released during that time period was the one that everybody refers to as the $17,000 temple rug, if you've ever heard of that. That document was in that period between the November policy and the October videos. A couple other things, I think. A lot of times people would contact me, and to be honest with you, the things they were telling me weren't as interesting as they thought it was. I mean, but, you know, they wanted to tell me about how their bishop, you know, offended them in this really egregious way. And I'm like, well, I mean, that sucks. So go write about it on Reddit or something, you know. and then sometimes people would tell me like these really salacious, like really interesting things. But then I would say, okay, so, you know, what kind of documentation do you have? Well, I mean, I'm willing to write something down. You know, that's not really what I was interested in doing. So again, go write it down on Reddit or something. And so then one day I get contacted by somebody saying, hey, I've got these videos I've been sitting on. You know, maybe you could help me. And I said, yeah, okay, sure. So he sends me these videos, and I didn't have time to watch them all before I posted them, because he asked me to try to get them up by like conference the next morning, Sunday morning. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I wanted to try to do that. And some of these are hours long, but I watched all the short ones and I was like, okay, these are interesting. I knew they were going to be a hit on Reddit. I thought maybe they'll get a mention, you know, in the online version of the Tribune. But I didn't really think much more than that. I hadn't watched the Gordon Smith video, which I think that's probably the video that made them go national. So they went viral, and the media went crazy with it. And I was interviewed more times than I can count. And it all culminated with a piece in the New York Times. And so now I got inundated. I mean, I couldn't even keep up with my inbox of people telling me whatever. And, you know, I kind of started to think about a website at that point, but it wasn't and this is like early October, like first week of October, right? I wasn't necessarily gung-ho yet, though, about a website, but it started to come into my mind that maybe this is the path. I felt like I was at a crossroads where it was like I had to, like, either go all in or just, like, completely remove myself and say, okay, I'm done. I did the videos, and that's it. I couldn't really sort of, you know, ride the fencer. So I was talking to a friend of mine, and this is the first time I've told this story, by the way, in public anyway. So I was talking to a friend of mine about something that had nothing to do with any of the leaks, and then we started talking about the videos, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, that's amazing, and this and that. And then he says, you know, I've got a document that would be absolutely amazing, and I don't even want to really say what the document is. We haven't released it, and we don't have it. But let's just say that it would be a huge story if I were to have this document. So he was talking to me in a way that I thought he was, like, ready to give it to me, you know? And I'm like, oh, you know, well, you know, there's this reporter who, you know, I kind of really hit it off with, you know, when all this stuff was going on. I said, you know, he'll probably, you know, maybe we can do something together. Again, this is before I've decided really to do a website. And he's like, yeah, yeah, okay, let's talk. So I set up this conference call, and so we do this conference call and with the reporter. And he's telling the reporter about this, and I mean, the reporter's salivating, you know, and I am probably salivating as well. It was a very nice thing that he has. And but the thing is that there are some serious professional implications if he were to release it and they were to find out who he was. That are very legitimate concerns, and it became. I thought going into that phone call, I really thought based on my conversations with him, that at the end of the phone call he was going to email me this document and we were going to be moving forward. Okay, but at the end, as the phone call got to the end, he kind of started to talk about how, well, you know, he's going to, now that he's talked to us and, you know, now he's going to have to, like, think about it and, you know, because his you know, anonymity and all this stuff. And so I just kind of said off the cuff, I said, well, you know, we're going to have a website soon. So why don't you just wait for that? And then, you know, you can decide what you want to do. And I mean, like I said, I kind of had the thought, but now I kind of was forcing myself into getting proactive. So it was shortly after that that I put an announcement on Reddit that I was looking for help to do this, because I don't know anything about computers, and at least not, you know, that level. And a lot of people contacted me, and privacy contacted me, and, you know, as he said, there was a little thing. He wanted to be anonymous to me, and I was like, I just told him no. And then he contacted me back. I don't know. I think he's published some of that exchange on his blog. But he did finally tell me who he was. So I went with him based on, you know, he had the best resume and background, and I felt good about going forward with him. And so we're building this website. And I'm this whole time, like, I'm not even thinking about people sending us stuff, really. I'm like, I want to build a website that if my friend decides to submit this document, that he'll be comfortable in making that decision. Like, that was literally all that I was thinking about to make this website. And I was like, I didn't even care what happened after that. So we put together a team. We had a guy who had a very similar background to privacy, but he couldn't really spend as much time, so he's kind of an advisor. We got Scott Fawcett, who's no longer with Mormon Leaks. As of about a month or so ago, he had to kind of move on with some other things in his life. But so we got the website launched, and I'm not going to rehash all the details of that. I think I've talked about it before, and I want to make sure we leave some time for questions. And you can ask me if you have questions about it, and maybe I can address it then. But if you fast forward to when we launched, you know, we're like launching, nobody sent us any documents or anything. You know, I'm thinking about my friend, and beyond that, I like have no idea what's going to happen. And I think just because, you know, it was around the presidential election, and, you know, there's all this conversation about leaks going on, and of course WikiLeaks is always in the news. And I think the fact that you know, here's another leak site, and it's about this secretive religion, you know, it somehow piqued the interest of the media at a really wide scale, much more than we thought. Before we even leaked anything, and they got wind that we were launching this site, I mean, another round of interviews, which was great because it kind of put our name out there. But on the same side, like, it put a lot of pressure on us because we didn't even know if this website was going to work, you know. Well, luckily, and I think it's safe to say that it was probably the first thing we received was the pay stubs of Henry Eyring. And, I mean, if you can pick a leak to be the first leak, I mean, it couldn't have been scripted any better than that. And we launched that leak early January, and everybody who followed what happened knows that it was, you know, kind of a big deal, at least within the online community. And, you know, as to whether or not that information, the pay information, is a positive or a negative, I mean, that's totally in the eye of the beholder. I think you can make arguments that pro and con with that, and I think all of them are probably have some validity. But the greatest thing, and one of the things I'm most proud of with this project and the pay stubs, is I think the perfect illustration of this is we started a conversation. You know, like it or not, people were talking. I mean, there's Deseret News articles and KUTV articles where they posted the article on Facebook, and each post has thousands of comments. And that's not super common for their Facebook posts. So conversations were being had, death threats were being made, and that's when you know that you're having a positive impact. And at least by my sick standard. So that launched us. And of course, there's still the question, though, of authenticity. I mean, the pay stubs look pretty authentic. I think we can all agree to that. But I don't think forging them would have been impossible. So there's still always that little thing. And then, as privacy said, we were really cemented our legitimacy when we got the takedown notice for the PowerPoint, because now we at least could say at least some of our documents are real, you know. And I also think, you know, personally, I kind of look at the fact that they never want to comment on the document as being telling, because I feel like if we produced a fraudulent document, I feel like they would jump all over it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they'd be all over that to discredit us. So, you know, it's been a crazy ride. the church has not contacted us after that takedown notice when we responded with our lawyer. It's been, like I said, the thing that I'm most proud of is the conversation and the people that have come out of the woodworks to say thank you, like some of the most unexpected places. I mean, I have multiple active Mormons that have emailed me and said, I love the church, and my one complaint is I don't know where my tithing goes, so thank you. And we still haven't shown where the tithing goes, but, you know, obviously any kind of pressure that can be put on them to sort of get there helps. And I guess we have shown where some money goes, because we've shown where some of the fast offerings went, and one of those, there was some payments that were made in a particular stake that were, you know, somewhat unexpected. I don't know if people saw that leak or not. And one other thing I wanted to say, and then we'll go to questions, and then you guys can ask anything, and we'll just kind of expand the conversation beyond there. But so our latest leak this past Monday, which if you didn't see it, it was a collection of 37 files, documents that were what we were told and what we have said in our post are the personal writings of Bruce R. McConkie. And a lot of interesting themes in those documents. They're, you know, from what we can tell, they're previously unpublished. There's one of them that I'm being told maybe was at one point published in a really obscure book, and I'm trying to verify that. And if we do verify that, then we'll note the file as such. But for the most part, these are all unpublished. The one, if you haven't read any of them, you need to read the one where it's his firsthand account of the lifting of the priesthood ban. It's absolutely fascinating. There's nothing really like controversial in it, in the sense of like, you know, he doesn't say something that you're like, oh, you know, I can't believe he said this. But it's just fascinating to see a firsthand account. And it's kind of like, it's more like a timeline. He doesn't talk too much about like his feelings about it. He more is like, okay, we did this, then we did this, then we did that. And it's fascinating. Read. So the validity of those documents has really been called into question more than a lot of our other documents. I guess maybe people think that somebody's out there writing 37 documents that are all internally consistent and sound like Bruce R. McConkie. Yesterday at about 4:00, and we haven't announced this yet, so I'm announcing this right now, we received a takedown notice for those documents. I think we can say that they're legitimate. The takedown notice is not from the church. It's actually from an attorney claiming to represent the McConkie family heirs, and they are claiming they have copyright on the documents. We are in contact with our attorneys. I think it's too early to say whether or not, you know, we're going to comply with the takedown notice, but it's going to have to be a really compelling reason for us to comply with it. As soon as we get some clarification from our attorney and he drafts a response, then we will post everything, including the attorney's letter asking us to take them down, and our attorney's response. We'll post those online. And I don't know, I mean, I can't like confirm or deny this, but maybe some other documents of McConkie's we might release as well. So we'll see. That's kind of all I wanted to say. Like, I hope that gives you guys kind of an idea of, oh, a lot of people ask me, you know, maybe I'll cut some questions off at the pass. A lot of people ask me like how much time I spend on this throughout the week. 'Cause, you know, I do have a real job, to put food on the table. It just depends, but I probably do spend too much time on this. But it is a labor of love, and, it's hard not to spend a lot of time on it, to be honest with you. When you receive these documents, it's like, you know, the first thing I want to do is open them and read them, because you just never know what it is till you open it. And so it's hard not to spend a lot of time on it. And I do work really hard to keep a good sort of family life balance to this. I don't know. I'll let my wife decide whether or not I'm successful in that. But my wife works swing shift, so I put most of the work I do, I put the kids to bed, and then I spend until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning working on Mormon leaks. So I usually am operating on about 3 or 4 hours of sleep every day. That's literally, if somebody says, how do you do it? I say, it's 4 hours of sleep every night. That's how I do it. So, but it's, you know, that's not a complaint, because I could quit if I wanted to. So it's something that I love to do. So, let me see, what time is it? Is there a clock, or how much time do we have? Okay. So what we'll do, I can talk for 10 hours about this stuff. So we are not going to end early. But I want to open it up to questions. And if somehow we have a dry spell of questions, I have some other things about Mormon leaks that I could talk about. But take the whole hour, ask questions. And remember, privacy still is on this. So if you have a question that you want to direct to him specifically, just make sure you say that. Yeah, that's a great question. This is one of the things that I don't like to talk about a lot, and it's mainly to protect the sources. So it's kind of a canned response, so my apologies, okay? But my kind of canned response on that is that I do know the identity of some of the leakers, and there's some that I have no idea who they are. And I do go through sort of a verification process that is admittedly not perfect because I don't think I'd ever be able to provide 100% certainty. But, as far as, I just don't want to really talk about anything that has to do with my relationship with the sources. So, I don't know. That might leave you a little disappointed, but that's that.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah, go ahead, privacy.
I just want to note that it is our preference that we have no idea who the leakers are. That is why we set up the system that we've set up. If they do it correctly, we have no way of determining who that person is. And that is our preference. The anonymity of our leakers is our top priority, and we take it extremely seriously.
Yeah, and if you submit through the website, you have to go out of your way for me to know who you are. Okay, if you just submit a document and even attach a note to it, because you can attach a note and say, give me some context, which I like, by the way, please always do that. I won't know who you are. You have to pretty much like spell it out who you are in order for me to know who you are. So, go ahead. There's a couple people right behind you there. You want to get in line there? Oh, you were in line. I'm sorry. There you go. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure. Good stuff. Well, I'm independently wealthy, so I found everything. No, I'm just kidding. I am far from it. I've often joked, if the apostles ever want to get into a pissing match over who has the most modest stipend, I think I will handily win. So I work for the government, and so I have a very modest stipend. But, we've received some donations that have gone to it, and, we publish our financials quarterly. Our second quarter for this year will be published at the end of this month on the 31st, so people will be able to see where the money goes. To start out, me and Scott Fawcett, who was one of the original people starting out, we self-funded this whole thing, and we have set it up so we have loaned Mormon Leaks the money. So in our books, if you look at our financials we have published so far, you'll see that there's a loan from the board members, and that's the monies that we have fronted. As of right now, I've almost paid Scott off completely. I have not withdrawn a dime yet, so I'm in the hole still. I'm hoping that changes, because while I don't want to make any money from this and never will, it becomes somewhat difficult to justify to my wife that not only am I not getting paid, but I'm also spending all this time and all this money and all this stuff. So I'll give my time. I can't give my money. So we accept donations if anybody wants to help us. We don't receive a lot, which, it is what it is. We haven't made a huge push either. We may do kind of like a push for funds in a couple of months. We're kind of toying with that idea. I hate asking for money. It's kind of a thing. And so that's one of the reasons why we haven't pushed too hard. But I would estimate that it takes about Depending on the traffic we get, it takes about $400 to $500 a month, and that's kind of probably high estimate. It's probably a little less than that to maintain the website. One of our servers for the wiki is hosted in Switzerland, so that it's outside of any kind of DCMA jurisdiction. And then we have another one for the main part of the website that's got nothing, really secret on it, is hosted here. But so it's about, we'll call it about $400 a month to maintain the website. So if anybody wants to help us out, go to our website. There's a donate button. Oh, so when we first contacted our lawyer, I had a couple of supporters that maybe had a couple dollars in their pocket, and they had said that they would help out with the response letter, which we were quoted about around $4,000, $3,000 to $4,000 to write. And I also did do kind of a specific ask for money when that happened, and we got a little bit of money from that. And then the lawyer ultimately ended up doing it pro bono. And he said that he would do response letters for us pro bono. And, if it got more serious than that, if like it was ever like had to go into a courtroom, he couldn't do it for free at that point. So right now our lawyer's been kind enough to do pro bono, and he is also going to be doing this next letter pro bono. He has confirmed that. When I did the push for money on the because of the lawyer fees, and I specifically said we need $4,000, and people gave specifically for that. And I think we got about $1,200 based on that little push for money. I did include a note in our financials letting people know that that money was not spent on the lawyer in the end, but that it would just simply stay in the fund and go towards the upkeep of the website. So I hope those people didn't feel like I mislead them, because we did not know it was going to be done pro bono at the time. So... was that all your questions? Yeah, as far as my friend's stuff, I don't really want to get into any more of that. Just the only reason I wanted to bring him up, because I wanted you guys to know, like, that was what was driving me in the beginning to get the website up, was him. And I didn't really know what was going to come after that. So. I don't know if that is on, but I wonder. Yeah, I'll try, and especially because I don't know if privacy can hear you. So, yeah, I'll restate the question after you say it. Mm-hmm. Here, yeah, go ahead. Use that mic. Start over.
So it's easy in the ex-Mormon community to boomerang to almost just as bad as TBMs, but in the exact opposite way. And I'm curious to know about your motivations. And like, it's easy to say it's about transparency. It's easy to say that. If that is indeed the case, how do you, as a human being, interact with that desire for vengeance or for retribution or for just that delight and satisfaction in bringing the church down a peg?
Privacy, you want to answer first and then I'll go?
Yeah, I think I heard most of the question. Do you mind restating it, Ryan?
She just wants to know about like the true motivations and about how in the ex-Mormon community, ex-Mormons have a tendency to sort of get very... revenge-like, and, how are we sort of drawing the line of this being revenge versus wanting true transparency? Did I restate that good? Okay. Right, because it's natural for us to be as human beings sort of want to sort of get back at the church, and, how do our motivations differ from that?
Yeah, for sure. This is a great question, and it's something that we talk about regularly. And I was asked the exact same question in the talk that I gave just a couple days ago here in Las Vegas. And ultimately, if it came down to it, if we got something that proved that the church was in the right on everything that they're doing, we would release that. But, and we have released things that have put the church in a good light before. We have absolutely no problem doing that. Our intentions are not to... not to bring the church down. Our intentions are to bring about transparency. And there have been times where we've gotten things that would probably be more damaging to an individual than they would than they would help us in our mission in bringing about transparency. and we have decided to not release those things. Ultimately, what it comes down to, if we have to make a call like that, we sit down and we talk about it, and we ask ourselves, how is this promoting transparency? How is this moving transparency forward? And if it's not, then we won't release it. But if it is, then we will. That's what I have there.
Yeah, and I agree with everything he just said. And just to sort of add to that a little bit, I've often said that I, Ryan McKnight, will fully admit that I am a critic of the church. And I don't try to hide that fact. But I do think, and I do think that it's possible to have enough nuance in your life to be able to say, okay, while I personally may have no love anymore for the church, I can still operate a website on a neutral playing field. Now, have we done that perfectly? I don't know. I mean, I'm not the one to make that decision. It's possible that we've made a mistake here or there. I don't think we have. I think we've done a pretty good job of, in the official capacity of Mormon League, staying neutral. I'm happy to be shown instances where we didn't. But, it is, like Privacy said, something that's constantly on our mind of trying not... We do not want to form the narrative around our leaks. That's definitely something we've never done. I always want the opinion to be informed by other people. And that's why if you look at our leaks, there's very little explanation or context given, and that's on purpose. And what we ultimately want to do is, as certain leaks are reacted to and maybe blog posts are written about them or news articles, we then want to go and update the wiki and say, well, according to this person, so we want it to be other people sort of commenting on the leaks as opposed to us. So that's one of the ways that we do it. And I reject the idea, and I'm not saying that you were suggesting this, but I reject the idea that I can't be a critic and also run Mormon Leaks in a neutral manner. I just flat out reject the idea because people do this every day. I mean, well, maybe I shouldn't bring up journalists because everybody has their opinion on how unbiased journalists are. But there are unbiased journalists out there, and they all have personal feelings about things, and they're able to. And I think a great example of that is, Peggy Stack at the Tribune. Now, I don't know her really, really well, but I've talked to her a lot on the phone, and I get the impression that she's pretty Mormon. And everybody online thinks she's like this wolf in sheep's clothing. And I just don't get that feeling from talking to her. But she is not afraid to write an objective piece about the church, and by objective meaning active Mormons are going to get pissed off. So it is possible to have that nuance in your life, and I feel like I do a decent job at that. So does that answer your question? Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Ryan. Hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm kind of trying to formulate this as I go, but let me start by taking a step back and telling you what I see and describe that and see if that contextualizes my question a little better. So you come into this room and we have somebody, Privacy P. Pratt, who's Skyping in, who is not showing their face. You essentially got your start in leaking Mormon documents, and it doesn't seem like you make any bones about the fact that you kind of enjoy that you have become kind of this conduit for Mormon leaks, and that you enjoy doing it. You put a lot of time into this. Now, I'm just so... I can't help but question the veracity and the ability that you're able to vet these documents, because you have an incredible amount of bandwidth. I mean, you just now posted 37 separate documents from Bruce R. McConkie that were previously unpublished. You have maybe two people working with you to vet these documents. Mm-hmm. You're not the New York Times. You don't have teams of people helping you to vet these documents. Where my concern lies is forgeries aren't just created out of thin air. They're slipped under the rug. They're given in a package as one small piece. So maybe 36 of those documents are completely legitimate, and that's why you received a cease and desist letter from the McConkie Foundation. But maybe there's one in there, the most controversial one that you just mentioned that you're trying to verify, that's actually a forgery. You don't have a bunch of people. This is not a public forum where there are a group of Mormon historians and scholars that are vetting these documents. And Mormon historians and scholars have been burned in the past, literally and metaphorically. So I'm just curious, how is somebody supposed to see what is going on tonight and see how your public perception is created here and be able to trust anything that comes out of Mormon Leaks? And I'm asking also because you and I just started a segment, and I want you to be able to publicly answer this question because it's one of my own deep personal concerns.
Right. No, thank you. I appreciate the question. For those that don't know, this is Bryce, and I'm not even going to try to say your last name. What's your last name?
Blankenagle.
Okay, Blankenagle. Naked Mormonism. And, you know, if you haven't listened to the interview that he did of me a couple months back, you need to, because he was really mean to me in that interview. He gave me the third degree, kind of along the lines of what he just did. But I actually appreciate it. I really do. And so it's a great question, and it's a question that often comes up in different forms of, you know, how can we trust these documents? Now, one thing I do want to say, this isn't answering your question necessarily, but this takedown notice actually specifically mentions all 36 documents in this particular case. So they name each document by name and actually link to the document with a hyperlink in the digital file that they sent us. So, but to your overarching question about, you know, how can our site be trusted? The reality is, as much as I hate to admit it, the reality is there has to be a level of distrust there because, you know, different documents I can vet to different levels. Okay, I mean, some documents I can be like 99.9% sure they're real for various different reasons. And there's some documents where that percentage might be less, but it's never going to be 100%. And I welcome the scrutiny of any kind on the documents. And believe me, it is a nightmare that I frequently have that we are going to be duped with something significant that's been in the paper and all this stuff, and all of a sudden it's the end of WikiLeaks or Mormon Leaks. Okay? And I'm trying to prevent that from happening, but it might happen, and I hope it doesn't. And how will it play out? I don't know. That's probably not the best answer to your question, because, look, if I could say to you, this is how I vetted the pay stubs, I wish I could say it to you, but it would just compromise too much of who my sources are. But I will tell you that when I published those pay stubs, I was almost 100% sure they were real. Okay. There's a lot of them that, you know, could easily, even like the bubble chart one, which, as Privacy pointed out earlier, could easily be forged. I mean, it was just a PowerPoint. It wasn't even a very good one, you know, aesthetically. But based on the circumstances around the sourcing and the vetting and all of that around that, I was as close to 100% sure it was real as you could be. Now I know that in your mind, or maybe you're even about to say, well, I mean, I can say that about anything, and that means nothing to you. I haven't helped you at all, and I realize that, and I just have to accept that that is just part of what we do. Is that there's always going to be that level of distrust, and I can't take it personally when people that, even if, like, I like the work that you do and I like you, and I just have to accept that I'm still going to get that criticism from people like you, and I have to say that it's legitimate. And so the criticism is legitimate, and the reality is I just don't have a great answer for you.
So kind of following in that same vein, if you don't mind a follow-up, is that all right?
Yeah.
So how then would you respond to somebody saying there's a certain two-faced nature to your commitment to getting the church to be more transparent, yet everything you do mm-hmm. is behind a wall?
Yeah. Well,
we don't get to see any of the process, nor is there a committee of Mormon historians and scholars that are vetting what you're doing. Everything is behind Zion's wall.
You know, I do think it's a little unfair to compare our organization with an organization that is, you know, claiming to possess, you know, the ultimate truth when it comes to our souls. So, and then, you know, suggesting that, you know, for a 10% fee, they can make sure that, you know, that soul goes to the right place. So I think it's a little unfair to draw like an exact parallel between the two. I would love for my website not to need to exist and for all of these sources to just be able to just come out and say, hey, I used to work for the church and this is what I worked on and have at it. I mean, I would love for that to be the case, but it's not, because as we know with privacy and with many of you here in this room, there's social consequences and sometimes professional consequences of you know, revealing yourself like that. So there has to be some anonymity. And as far as like whether or not that's hypocritical to us requiring transparency from the church. You know, and this is something that I'm going to get into a little bit tomorrow, but I'm not asking for 100% transparency from the church. Like, we have specific areas where we think the church needs to be transparent. So, I don't know. Again, that might not be the best answer to your question, but let me just say that anybody that has that question or concern, I recognize it, and I think it's a valid concern. And if anybody wants to, like, permanently withhold their trust in me and my website, like, till the end of time, I accept it. I don't know what else to do.
I only feel comfortable asking those questions because we're friends
and
we have a working relationship.
No, and even if you're not friends, you can ask that question. But yeah.
I think you summed it up really well, and you're trying to be transparent in as much as you can. Obviously, there are people with a lot riding on these things that you can't reveal. So I do appreciate what you're doing.
And I hope that if we do get bamboozled, first of all, I hope it doesn't happen. But if it does, I hope it doesn't mean the end of the website. But it might. I don't know. You know, we'll just have to see. We'll have to cross that bridge when it comes.
Ryan, I just had the pleasure of meeting you recently, and I'm not sure how far I can go now. there is a principle of separation of church and state in the United States, and churches and religious organizations are not tasked to transparency as much as are 501c3 organizations, for example. And just two quick examples. We all are familiar with the evangelical crusade of Billy Graham in the for several decades, arguably one of the most important religious movements. He received millions of dollars in contributions and never disclosed one penny of how that was spent, according to information I've heard from people who complained about it. On another note, I have a background in the Roman Catholic Church. I have relatives active in my diocese, and they laugh at the financial reports from the parish. It couldn't possibly be real. There is really no disclosure, and I don't think there would be in most Roman Catholic dioceses, of what is actually happening to the money that comes into the church. That being said, can we cut some slack for LDS? Now, on another hand, however, I'm a member of another organization, and I continue to be a member, that promotes Mormon studies. I'm not going to name the organization, but it deals with Mormon history. But I'm not going to name it. And I've attended at least four or five of their business meetings over the years, and the treasurer's report never went beyond, "We're doing well." And I was like, duh. And so I thought, now's the time to stand up and say something. I said, you know, I'm new here. I don't want to antagonize the group. So I didn't. I could technically make waves over this. Mm-hmm. They should be disclosing what is happening with their finances. So how would you process this?
Okay. Privacy, do you want to say anything on that as far as the difference between, you know, how we can justify, you know, when the church doesn't have the legal obligation to do it like other nonprofits do?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a completely legitimate question, but I would argue that just because they don't have the legal obligation to do it does not mean that they don't have the ethical obligation to do it.
Yeah. No, he took the words out of my mouth. I mean, you know, just because it's legal to do something doesn't mean you should, and just because, you know, you're not going to get in trouble, you know, just because you don't have to do something doesn't mean, you know, you still might. It might be the right thing to do. And those of us who grew up Mormon, what were we always taught? It was always do the right thing and let the consequences follow, right? And, I mean, the right thing to do is to tell people where the money goes. And it's not just the money, really. I mean, our two big pillars of what we want to see is obviously the money, but also the corporate policies and procedures. You know, people are donating money to an organization, and they don't even really know what most of the corporate policies and procedures are of that company. Okay? And so we're maintaining that people do have a right to know. Now, you might, let's say that tomorrow the church opens up the books, okay? And, you know, oh, and also another thing, and I'm going to get into this a little more detail tomorrow, but I'll touch on a little bit here. You know, I'll speak for myself. I am not asking for the church to give us, like, every line item in their financials. You know, I don't need every line item. It can be even just a top-level financial statement would be, like, a great place to start. And may even be enough to satisfy most people's thing. But, you know, if people see the finances and they see the corporate policies and procedures, like, let's just to sort of like narrow it down to one sort of generic thing. Let's say the handbook. Which number of the handbook of instructions is the secret one? Is it one or two? One. Okay. So let's just say public access to handbook one. Obviously, there's other policies and procedures, but just to for the sake of conversation, you know, and then you read that, you may have no problem with the stuff in the handbook, and that's fine, but at least you know what's in it. And the same thing with the money, like, you might say the apostles deserve $1 million a year in salary. Fine, they probably do. I mean, they're running a major corporation. So if you were to find out they were making $1 million a year, you might say, that's great, I'm glad my money is going to that, and that would be legitimate. But at least the decision would be an informed decision, and that's what we want. We don't want, like, I don't really care if people are Mormon or not. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, you want to be Mormon, you want to go to church, more power to you. Okay, I got other better things to do on Sunday. But I just don't want you to do it uninformed because, I don't think you should have to. So that's all. Okay.
So are you a 501c3 corporation?
So I'm hoping to I did file that paperwork a couple weeks ago, and maybe it's in the mailbox already. I don't know.
Not quite.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit corporation in the state of Nevada, and I just the only reason I haven't gotten that 501c3 designation yet is simply just because I just haven't had time to, but I just did submit the paperwork, so we'll have that designation shortly.
Okay, and then could you go into a little more detail on the sort of the standards that you use with respect to stuff that you would publish versus you wouldn't. So, for example, I assume that the higher up in the church hierarchy the document relates to, there's a closer connection between personal scandal and organizational issues. Mm-hmm. So if some bishop was seen in an R-rated movie, who cares?
Right.
Okay.
But what if one of the apostles? What if one of the apostles was gay?
Okay.
Okay. That would be a scenario, right?
And so, give us some sense of things like that, where you perhaps would not publish, versus an argument why you would publish in that particular situation, because I think that's where you're really likely to get slammed and also possibly do.
So, thanks. I'm going to run the risk of disappointing you on the answer because I'm probably not going to give a complete answer because there's no sort of like defined line in the sand where we say, okay, this topic is good and this topic is off limits. Okay. It's literally a case by case situation. And as Privacy alluded to, we do have some documents from the apostles, from multiple apostles that are related to their personal life that I just can't draw close enough connection to to the relevancy of the church as an organization. And although ex-Mormons would probably love for me to release these particular documents, and so we are not going to release them. And so we have made that decision before on documents. Now, if you take it to sort of like an extreme, and what if we got like, some sort of video or documented proof that one of the apostles was, having a homosexual affair, for example. I mean, that would be, New York Times is going to come knocking again, right, if her story like that. It's a tough situation. I think if it was an apostle, I think it's probably going to come out because of their public position on such things. And I think it would require that level of hypocrisy in that particular instance would probably necessitate, the public knowledge. And, of course, it would be different with a bishop or a stake president or maybe even like a low-level area authority. It might even be different. One of the things that I often think about, and I haven't received this, but if I were to receive the actual tax returns for somebody, let's say, in the 70 or above, one of these people that we know has the base salary of around $120,000, if I received their personal tax returns and it showed, let's say, a lot more than that, what do I do? And that is a tough, tough call because I have a lot of respect for the privacy of one's tax returns, and I think it is a very limited, narrow window when those things should be shared with the public. I think, and I don't know what I would do, but I think what I would do would be to get a couple of media people that I trust together, share the document with them. Now, we're assuming that this shows that they make a lot more than $120,000, right? If I get a tax return that says they make $120,000, good to go. It just confirms what we've already put out there. No big deal. But let's just say it says, $500,000 all from the church. as an example. I'm going to get maybe I would get together the media, some trusted reporters. I would allow them to view the document and allow them to report on what they've seen in the document and not release the actual tax return. I don't know if that's what I would do, but I'm just saying that might be something that I would do in that case. Anyway, that's kind of a long-winded way to answer your question of it is literally a case-by-case basis, and it's our judgment. And then somebody, you might say, well, what if your judgment's different from my judgment or whatever? Well, then, I don't know, maybe start a competing website. I don't know. Or if a source sends us something and they're unhappy that we passed on it, well, I mean, they're free to publish it some other way. You know, there's definitely nothing stopping them from that. So, okay.
You mentioned that the videos were a very quick turnaround time, but mm-hmm. I don't know that you've talked about how much time you spend to process other information, vet it, clean it of metadata, stuff like that.
Sure.
Just so there's not this impression that that you got the McConkie stuff last week and released it this week.
Well, we got the McConkie stuff months ago, but... Privacy, do you want to talk a little bit about how time-consuming your part of the process is?
The weeks leading up to our launch, I was working two full-time jobs because, as Ryan said, I have another full-time job, and Mormon Leaks is what I do in my spare time, And there are times when it takes up much more time, much more of my time than others. The McConkie documents, which we just released for various reasons, took up a little bit more of my time than normal. If it's a large document that we have to do major redactions with, takes up a little bit more of my time. But I mean, we could spend anywhere from 2 minutes to 2 days getting documents ready, right? It just really depends on how long the document it is, what kind of document it is, if it's a movie, if it's a picture, if it's a PDF, if whatever. As far as like an average time of how much I spend on Mormon Weeks a week, I would say about 10 hours a week.
Yeah. And I probably spend a little bit more time on that only because a lot more of like the inquiries and stuff get directed at me, and so I gotta spend a lot of time like dealing with people or whatever, or you know, whatever sort of internet stuff's going on, interviews and things like that, and then, you know, the vetting of the documents, just like, you know, he's dealing with mostly like the cleaning of the metadata and stuff, and it can vary and whatnot, and sometimes the vetting takes days or weeks or you know, maybe one day, it just depends, you know. So, and then something like the McConkie documents, which we received several months ago, and I was comfortable that they were real probably about a month ago. I had gotten to the point of vetting them where I said, okay, I'm one. And now a month later, we've published the first, you know, or actually, we've published 36. That was a slip of the tongue. And really, it was just getting the time to sit down. Because the first thing I did with those is, are they real? Then I had to say, are they actually unpublished? You know, those were two separate issues. So, you know, that was, you know, the McConkie documents were probably the most time-consuming up to this point, just because of the sheer volume. But, I mean, we've had, like, single sources send us, like, hundreds and hundreds of documents at a time. So it takes a long time to, like, go through those and see what's, like, legitimate. I mean, we have hundreds of documents we haven't even released yet, you know. And some of them I probably haven't even fully vetted. You know, so it for me, I'd say it's at least 20 hours a week for me. So first of all, I want to say it's nice to meet you in person.
Yeah,
hopefully we get to talk afterwards.
I'm short. I'm going to have to pull it down. Mithrin from Reddit, and I'm just going to give a plug. If you want to hear how the subreddit helps to filter the documents, tomorrow, 10:30, we have a panel. So, because we do have a bunch of amateur historians.
Yes,
who will
Reddit
totally
is full work. Of, there's an expert on everything in Reddit.
Or at least they believe they are. Yes. Anyway, so my question is, what efforts are you making? I mean, you've got plenty of documents. You're trying to filter through them. But to actually get, I don't want to use the word marketing, but I work in marketing, so it's the word that comes out, to get people who are in those key positions that have the documents, are you working on better form submission that they can pre-weed it out or provide more support of their documents so you don't have to spend so much time? What efforts are going on to streamline the process to make your life easier?
We haven't really made any improvements in that other than what was initially put out there. And privacy, why don't you talk a little bit about the submission process and how they can carry on a conversation with us on the website?
That's fine. The submission process is we use a program known as SecureDrop, which is developed by the Freedom of the Press Foundation. We have a good relationship with the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and they've provided some support and advice through this whole thing. To submit via SecureDrop, you have to connect to a secret network. Secret's the wrong word. A different network that lives within the internet, and it's called the Tor network. And Tor is not incredibly user-friendly. However, it anonymizes your internet traffic so that if anyone is snooping, such as your internet service provider or your employer, if you're at work, they cannot tell where you are going. They cannot tell what sites you're going to. And actually, our submission system is only accessible via this network. You cannot access our submission system on the regular internet. You have to connect to the Tor network. And we had some worries if that was going to hinder people from submitting documents. However, we have found that it has not. As Ryan has said, we have hundreds of documents. What's really cool about SecureDrop is that it provides a completely encrypted messaging system. You can send us a message and we can respond, and that is completely encrypted. It stays on our server. It's not crossing any other lines of fiber or Ethernet on the internet that anyone else can tap. So that's completely private, completely encrypted. And we have had conversations with our sources through that way, and we love it that way because we have no idea who our sources are. Addressing the question which he asked, what are we doing to streamline the process? I actually personally am working with the Freedom of the Press Foundation because the majority of organizations that use SecureDrop are media organizations and don't have full-time developers. While I'm not a developer, I'm a very tech-savvy person, and I'm working with the Freedom of the Press Foundation to help streamline this process, make it a little more user-friendly. As far as the Mormon League side, we've talked about various things and maybe I could let Ryan talk a little bit more about that, but we're up for ideas.
Yeah. And what you see when you go and submit a document, it'll pop up sort of like this dialog box where you can type in a message to us saying, and then it'll say, you know, also like attach a document. It'll search your hard drive and you pick the document you want to put in, just like any kind of upload. And what you're going to see is like it'll give you seven words, like these seven random words. That is your password. And when we receive it, I get it from I see seven words that are attached to your submission, but they're not the same words as yours. But inside, they're connected. But, you know, for me, it's one set of seven words, and for you, it's another set of seven words. If I respond to my seven set of words, your seven set of words receives a message. And when you go in at a later time into SecureDrop, and you can either, if you don't want to check the messages or whatever, you can do a new submission and get a new set of seven words, but it does give you the option to sort of log in, and your login is to type in those seven random words, and then it'll show you that you have a message from us, for example. So, and that's kind of how we would communicate. And unless you, like I said before, unless you like tell me your name in those channels, like I can't go back to the back end of our website and see, you know, what your IP address was, none of that. I can't see any of that. So, okay. Did we answer? Who was that asked the question? Oh, Kenneth. Was that good? Okay.
I'd like to ask a simple question at the risk of it being a stupid question. And I'd love to hear how you both would answer this from two perspectives, both from your own perspectives and from the perspective of the church. As concisely as you can, why is the church transparent?
Why are they not transparent?
Or yeah, right. Why are they not transparent?
Okay, so you want me to answer that from a former and what maybe a faithful member would say?
Like what as concisely as you can put their official response.
So I can't talk for like 30 minutes about it.
Even one or two words. Like
yeah.
I'm just curious what you guys would say okay. from your own perspective and from theirs.
Privacy. You want to answer that first?
Yeah, I just want to clarify the question. Why do I think the church is not transparent?
Yeah, and then also, what do you think an active Mormon would say the reason is?
Okay, the reason that I don't think the church is transparent, it's a great question. I believe that someone somewhere down the line decided that something or everything needed to be hush-hush, and that has just, and it could have been 40 years ago, it could have been back with Joseph Smith. There have been times where the church has gone through, there have been times where the church has been more transparent than others, and I believe that at some point in time the decision was made to not be transparent on maybe a particular issue or a particular subject, and it's just permeated through the years until we get the completely sealed vault that we have now. That's my opinion. As far as what I think an active Mormon would say, I think they would say that the church doesn't necessarily need to be transparent because it's the Lord's church and we need to trust in the Lord, something along those lines.
So here's how I'll answer it. I'm going to be maybe not a little concise because I have some thoughts about this. First of all, from the members' perspective, I think a lot of members, at least what I see them say, is something along the lines of, I faithfully give my tithing and it's none of my business what happens after that. Now, do they actually believe that? I don't know. I suppose some do, but I think there's a lot more members out there that I know for a fact that there are a lot of active believing members that wish there was more transparency. But here's the thing. Why they stopped being transparent at whatever point in the 1950s or whatever year it was when they stopped giving somewhat detailed reports, I don't know why. But they have painted themselves into a corner. And to the question, I'm going to make the question, why are they not transparent today? And I see it as being because they've painted themselves into a corner where they can't be. They have literally nothing to gain from being transparent. So let's say that they opened their finances to a level that every ex-Mormon or every rational ex-Mormon, let me put that caveat. Yes, some of us are not rational all the time. Reddit, please don't kill me. Okay. But that a rational ex-Mormon can say, you know what, that's a pretty good job of showing your finances. Let's say they do that. And let's say that it is completely above board to where even like the most hardcore ex-Mormon can't even find a criticism. Let's say it's that beautiful a set of books. Are any of those ex-Mormons coming back to church? Okay. So complaints about finances is one bullet point in the long list of reasons why people leave the church. It might have been a huge bullet point in the beginning for some people, and then they find out other things that bother them, and it just becomes another bullet point. So they don't have any members coming running back to them by changing. Now, let's say that they release these books and it's not so clean. And I don't mean illegal activity, because I don't think the church is engaged in any illegal activity, at least from a financial level. Now, maybe I'll be proven wrong. Maybe Fred will prove me wrong. We've had this conversation a lot. I like Fred, and I want him to prove me wrong. But until he does, I don't think the church is engaged in any illegal activity. But let's just say things that make people unsettled by, you know, they just, like, just an exorbitant amount of money spent on the apostles' lifestyles, as a really easy example, okay? They would stand to lose people. Not everybody, but there's some of those people that are on the fence that are giving them the benefit of the doubt right now, and that might be the tipping point for them. So they are in a no-win situation with this transparency thing. They gain nothing and will possibly, and almost guaranteed, will lose something. Whether how big that would be, it would be unknown. So I think that it's a, at this point, whatever the origin of the lack of transparency is, it has morphed into, right now, the best business decision is to continue not being transparent. It would be a bad business decision for them to voluntarily be transparent. Does that make sense? Okay. We'll take this one last question, and then, you know, we'll give a couple of closing remarks, as I know we're, so make it a quick one.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. I'm interested in the anonymity aspects of this. You mentioned metadata, but there are technologies today that allow you to, for example, digital watermark of a video that could actually be used to trace back to the original source.
Sure.
How much concern do you have around keeping the anonymity in place when you get those kinds of pieces?
So that's a great question. I'm not even going to try to answer this because I don't even know what metadata is. Okay? Privacy, this one is all yours.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a question, from the sounds of it, you might work in a technical career, but so you may or may not know this, but it's a question that continues to plague my industry constantly. Like, you're not the first person to ask that. Professionals in my industry ask themselves the same thing. I mean, we saw recently, I don't know how much you all follow leaks in other areas of the media, but recently Reality Winner leaked something. She was an NSA employee. She leaked something to The Intercept, and the printer which she printed that document on had left a fingerprint, and the NSA was able to track it back to her, and she is now awaiting trial. It's a serious issue. As far as what do we do to protect that anonymity, like, it's very rare that we get a document that has metadata going back to our source. A lot of times the metadata goes back to the person in the church that created the document. And as far as being able to scrub the metadata thoroughly and being able to scrub it so it's completely gone, that's extremely hard to do and near impossible in some situations. For instance, you mentioned videos. There can be specific watermarks in videos. Typically, we might re-encode that video in an attempt to get rid of such watermarks, right? Things like that. We might actually remake a PDF document so that in attempt to get rid of all the other metadata. Now, is that perfect? No, that is far from perfect. But if you know somebody that does have a perfect solution for this, please introduce them to me, because I have constant conversations with this from people at Freedom of the Press Foundation and other cybersecurity experts, and we all do the best that we can do. And I, for one, am proud of our processes, and I am confident that we do the very best that we can to get rid of the metadata and any other traces that could potentially lead back to our sources. That being said, we are constantly looking to iterate and be better in that area.
And, you know, the only thing I'm going to add to that is that make no mistake that privacy puts a huge amount of effort into cleaning these documents in any way, shape, or form. And I suppose just like anything in life, you know, nothing can be 100%. And hopefully our sources do realize that, you know, we do everything we can to protect their anonymity. But at the end of the day, you know, there is no 100% guarantee that a source is going to be able to stay anonymous forever. He is always learning new things, and we're always open to new ideas, and we're always trying to look out for whatever the latest thing is out there and stay on top of it. I think we're like pretty much out of time, so I just want to thank everybody for coming out here, and I want to thank all the support that if you've ever sent me any kind of like a message of support, it's greatly appreciated. Even if I haven't had a chance to respond to you, I do try to respond to everybody that messages me on whatever different platform, but if I haven't, please don't take it personally. I almost guaranteed that I read your message and appreciated it. I hope the one thing I want to, a lot of people have asked me, what do you want to get out of this whole thing? Like, not Mormon Leaks, but like out of coming here to Sunstone. And between this and my presentation tomorrow, which 3:45 right here, it's going to be somewhat of a different topic related to Mormon Leaks. It'll be good, I hope. There's this sort of perception of who I am online, right? Like everybody knows everything about me, supposedly. And if anybody's read some of the blog posts about me, which I have a lot of fun reading, but very few of them actually hit the mark, I think. And I wanted to be able to sort of come here and maybe put a little bit more personal touch on Mormon Leaks and who we are, and realize like I'm not like the boogeyman, and I don't think I'm Satan's spokesperson. And if I am, I need to go find out where my paycheck is, because I haven't gotten it yet. But I just kind of wanted people to see that I'm just a regular guy, and privacy, whether you may not realize it because of his little voice thing there, but he's just a regular guy. I actually met him in person for the first time 2 days ago, believe it or not. We had never met in person, so it's kind of weird. We've been working together pretty closely for the last, we're coming up on a year from our first contact, and, I just met him for the first time. But we're just regular guys that have a passion for truth and have a passion for transparency, and, it's really not much more than that. It really isn't. This is not being fueled by like some deep-seated hatred for the church. I don't even really think I have a deep-seated hatred for the church. I just have like a huge disagreement with them, So anyway, that's that. And we're completely out of time, but I'll stick around if anybody wants to come up. If they had a question they didn't have a chance to ask, but thank you for coming.